Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
This podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Reality Check Podcast Network.
Welcome to RTW Rewind. Red Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Red Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. This is episode number 2, and I have a very, very special guest. Two guests, actually. First off, we have... if you are a fan of wrestling, you guys know exactly who this gentleman is. He's been around for quite some time. He is an absolute legend in the sport of professional wrestling. He is the wild-eyed Southern boy, Tracy Smothers. Good evening, sir. How you doing, man?
Hey, okay. Doing better. How you doing, Rob? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate you taking your time out to talk to me tonight. We also have the author of Tracy's book. John, remind me what the book is. It's a long title.
If you don't buy this book, everybody dies.
I love it.
It is the life story of the one and only Tracy Smothers.
That is the author speaking right now, Mr. John Cosper. How are you doing this evening, sir?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you being here as well to help Tracy out. You know, Tracy, I know it's a tough thing to talk about, and I kind of want to make this a positive show, but obviously I just want to address your health concerns over the last few months. I don't know how you're still here. I listened to your interview with David Penzer that you did recently. You know, you talk about being hospitalized, 11 times since you got diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. How are you still kicking out, brother?
A lot of prayer and some luck and just hope, you know, faith. Hardest thing I've ever been through. And we did a lot of the book, didn't we, John, while I was in the hospital, you know?
Yeah, we did. There were some nights that actually those were some of our better nights when he was whatever they were giving him to help him deal with the chemo. He was wound up those nights, and you know, there were some scary nights too. Though we had to cut things a little short, but we did do quite a few interviews while he was in the hospital, and he was hooked up and doing chemo as we spoke.
Man, I don't know how you do it, Tracy. I mean, literally, the power of God has pulled you through. You know,
I'm a player. I don't want to die, you know. But I tell you what, it tests your faith, tests your, your strength, mentally, physically, spiritually. I never dreamed that I would ever have cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, and I fought it for a while. Didn't know it. I thought I had an ulcer, bleeding ulcer. The expert told me. And I was just trying to tough it out, and it's a couple months before I got checked out. And then found out I had a tumor, you know, a fast-growing tumor, and you know, and started the chemo, and then boy, it was just really rough. The chemo was the hardest part. It side effects off of that. When I go in because I have a blockage in my heart, and they said I'd had a heart attack some point, and I didn't even know it. I only had 40, I lost 40% of my heart. It's irreversible, and I didn't know it. I had a little blockage, so they had to keep the chemo on me 24/7 for 5 days straight, each time, every 3 weeks. And we'd, like I said, we'd two or three times a week, not be in the hospital or home on a lot of medicine, is when we did the most, a lot of the book. And I think I might could have done a better job of remembering some people in it. I don't know. And sometimes I might remember better because I was lots of doped up pills and steroids and all that prednisone and all that. They had, of course, chemo and shots. And, you know, I mean, everything. But, oh, Lord, you know, it's crazy.
Man, I hate that for you. I really do. I mean, I know you've announced it on Facebook, and you had such an outpour from the community of you know, support. You know, so many people love you over the years, Tracy, and you know, we've all been pulling for you. It's amazing that you've been able to pull through as far as you have now with all. I mean, you said your kidneys had shut down at one point, right? And you had the heart attack, and I mean, it just...
I got C. diff, side effect off of chemo, and I had to be rushed to the hospital. I didn't remember hardly any of it. An ambulance, and it was in between about 2 weeks after the chemo, and every 3 weeks I'd do chemo, and about what, John, 5-6 times I had to be hospitalized again.
So the chemo, and then it's been 5 different times he's had to go back in, and just from side effects or just with his immune system being down. I mean, COVID-19 came around at the wrong time, man.
We're trying to get back out there.
The thing about it is the, when you said about the outcry with people, it blow your mind how many people can relate with that deadly disease, cancer, because you hear so many stories of loved ones, friends, everyone has, and they live it too, you know, and you have so much respect for people that have fought this or have had this of any type and had to deal with it, because it's really bad. And it's just, what's crazy is right when I got done with my chemo is when this outbreak of the virus started. And my immune's down as there is, so I'm really careful getting out or doing anything, you know, around people. Really washing my hands, you know, everything you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I had about 5 weeks when I was done with chemo. I thought I was out of the woods, not having any side effects, and I got some fluid on my lungs. And I was real scared because I thought, you know, you hear a lot about that with this virus.
Yeah.
And so I'm heading to the hospital. I drove myself, and I'm just praying. I'm like, oh, Lord. And I got there, and that place is down like Fort Knox, you know, the hospital, and they told me it wasn't nothing with that. It was a side effect off chemo, and they drained 2.2 pounds of fluid off my lungs.
Wow.
You know, about as much as a liter drink, you know, and it was crazy.
Man, I'm telling you, God bless you, man. I don't know how you stay so positive, man. How are you staying so positive with everything you've had to go through?
I got to do everything right. I have to do everything right. And I try to start the day and watch Joyce Myers and TBN and get my day right at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And like I said, I can't make any mistakes, and I'm not out of the woods yet. You know, I've got to go back to 21st for a checkup on something. Okay. And, you know, we'll see then. But, you know, it's a scary thing because they say cancer lives in everybody.
Yeah.
And I've always heard it. It's hereditary, but none of my immediate family has had it. So I've been around people who had it, knew people who had it, but I never thought I would get it. But you just don't ever know. You don't ever know, you know, especially nowadays.
No, I know. And I believe in it. You know, I'm one of those old school guys like you, Tracy. I'm almost 44. I'll be 44 in a couple of weeks. And, you know, I think microwaves and cell phones and all this stuff could bring that out and cause it too. You know, sugar is a big, cancer feeds on sugar as well. So I'm sure you got to watch your diet. And, you know, it's, there's so many different factors that could bring it on. And man, and like John said, with this virus going on, this virus came on at the wrong time, buddy. I mean, to go through what you're going through and to be compromised, you know, with your immune system. Are you scared?
When I get out, I'm really careful. I cover up everything I do. Yeah. And like the other day, I was going to go into Walmart and it was really crowded. And I turned around and I ended up going to the dollar store. And it was like 2 o'clock on a weekday. That's when, you know, everybody's was out of work and home and everything. That's when the stay home order was still going on. And I just thought it may not be a good idea for me to go in there because I'm very, very, you know, susceptible to very contagious.
Right.
And I'm 57 years old now, so I got to watch it. I guess considered elderly, you know. So,
You're still a young guy. You're still a young guy. I don't. Come on, man. 57. That's a new 40, brother.
This whole thing just took a lot out of me, you know. And
yeah,
I'm just trying to get back on track, and trying to do everything right.
Well, I mean, you look great. How are you feeling?
All right. I got a long way to go, but it's better than it was. A lot better than it was. I almost died two or three times. You know,
crazy, man. Well,
thankful to be here.
The Lord must have a plan for you, brother, because you're still kicking, man.
I was saying, the timing couldn't have been better for us to get together and work on the book because,
gave him something
to, you know, he was driving him, you know, and he was excited for every time we got together and, you know, doing his homework and taking it. Like he always says, Tim Dennison's the guy who connected us up. He's a longtime friend of his and everything. And he said, take it year by year. And we did that, you know, every time out, you know, we would take 1 year at a time and his memory is unbelievably sharp, you know, so especially in the earlier years before all the chair shots set in and everything.
right.
What's really great is, you know, there's a lot of stories everybody wants to hear that they've heard before. Everybody's heard the bear stories and everything, but you know, there's stories about his time in Singapore and Mexico City that nobody's heard. At least I haven't heard any of these.
Yeah.
They are hair raising tales, let me tell you.
So whacked out on the chemo and all the other stuff that had me on, I wouldn't even remember that because that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Stuff I've been through, I'm lucky to be here.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
RTW Rewind.
I watched a shoot interview you did with Hannibal for up in Canada, and just to learn a little bit from stuff that I didn't know about you, because, you know, I know you from WCW in 1990 on from that, so I wasn't familiar with anything before that. But, you know, watching that interview with Hannibal, your recollection was fantastic. You remember things that I forgot. I mean, it's really remarkable about how much stuff you remember from your career. Because if you ask guys like Steve Austin, you know, who can't remember half the stuff he does, but your memory has been pretty darn good.
I can remember stuff from decades ago, but not what happened yesterday.
Right? Yeah. Sure. No. Same here. I mean, for sure. Look, you went through some crazy times. I do want to touch on some of it. I actually had the privilege. I mean, you wouldn't forget. I mean, you wouldn't remember because you meet so many people. But I had the privilege of meeting you at a show in Nashville. I want to say maybe 2 years ago or so. For God, I can't remember the name of the promotion, but it was at the fairgrounds. And you know, you were the nicest guy that, you know, and a lot of people have said the same thing. Absolutely one of the nicest guys in the business. But I'm fortunate that I was able to meet you and shake your hand and thank you for everything you've done. And again, thank you for all your years of entertaining me, because, you know, I'm a lifelong wrestling fan. I've been watching, you know, for 30 plus years. And
where are you from?
I live outside of Nashville. I live in Smyrna, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
So about 20 minutes east of Nashville. But
hardcore homecoming, maybe Tommy Dreamer's promotion.
It wasn't for Tommy's. I the name escapes me right now, and I don't think they run shows there anymore.
Riley, Reinhardt,
possibly. Possibly. You know, I wish I could remember, and it, you know, yeah, I could Google it.
A few of them there. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was, I don't even know what you did that night, but you know, I saw that you were in town, and like, and from watching you from the early days, you know, like I said, in WCW, is like, I got to go meet this guy. I mean, like, I've heard the stories, you know, I've heard stuff from Smoky Mountain and all the craziness that went on there. And I do want to ask you about some of that to see, you know, your thoughts on Jim Cornette. Well, let's just start there. Jim Cornette gets a bad rap for being, you know, crazy. Yeah, he's goofy as a pet coon, as Jim Ross would say. But is he really that crazy, Tracy? Like, how is he behind the scenes? Is he as crazy as he is that he portrays out to everybody else?
Oh, if Jimmy was 7 foot and 300 pounds, he'd kill 1,000 people already. He is one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He really is. And believe me, he says exactly what's on his mind. And very smart. I learned so much from him in Smoky Mountain before that at WCW. You know, and anytime Steve and I got to work with Bobby and Stan, you know, it was just a pleasure. And once I got to Smoky Mountain, he taught me how to do interviews as a babyface, as a single babyface. I've been in tags a lot, and just how to get over and how to, you know, angles, and you know what I mean? And storylines and all, and to tell a story. He has such a mind. I always thought him and Paul E were two of the smartest guys, you know, Paul Heyman, and that I ever worked for. And there's quite a bit of others, Michael Hayes, you know, in there. And, you know, I always thought Terry Taylor was very smart, you know, and, you know, and of course, you know, Jimmy, just crazy. He's crazier than a rainbow trout in a car wash. I mean, he wrote the forward of the book, and that was an honor. And he always was good to me. And Jimmy's not going to change. He's stuck in what he believes in. And one thing about it, he's coming from the heart. And it's his opinion, whether you like it or not. I mean, that's how he feels, and he's going to let you know. He's not scared of nothing.
I had to know, because I see him on Twitter and I hear him on his podcast, and I mean, he's got some pretty outlandish thoughts sometimes. But he's very passionate about what he does. I mean, no matter what he does, he's all in. He's 100%. But I just want to get a little bit of perspective from somebody that I worked personally with him.
What a great mind for the business and everything. I always thought the best, if you could get them together, and of course I don't think they get along real good or what, but if you could get Paul and Jimmy together, and if I had a company to do, I'd have them running it, booking it, you know what I mean, booking the talent and the angles and all, but we probably have to have bodyguard or to keep them killing each other.
You know? They actually got along better than you would think. They, in his waning days at OVW, the powers that be sent him down there thinking that that would drive him out, and he said he and Paul got along great. They're two very, very different guys, but at that time they had, you know, kind of one mind and one purpose. And he said for that brief time, you know, they found another way to get Jimmy out of there. But at least for that short stint, they got along well.
Yeah, Jimmy gave Paul his break in OWCW back years ago, you know, when they did that Midnight Express against the original Midnight Express and all that, you know. So, you know, just two very smart guys.
So the first match I ever saw you in, Tracy, was the Great American Bash in 1990, and you and Steve Armstrong, as the Wild Eyed Southern Boys, took on the Midnight Express. And I'm telling you, man, you guys put on an absolute clinic. You know, if anybody is aspiring to be a wrestler, they need to go back and watch matches like that, because you guys, for being in the middle of the card, you guys tore the house down. And the show really didn't pick up until that match. That was the first match I ever watched you in. I was blown away by how great of a match that was. What are your thoughts of working with guys like Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane? I mean, you want to talk about, especially Bobby Eaton, who's criminally underrated as a wrestler. You guys had really good chemistry with those guys.
Oh, if you couldn't with them, you couldn't with nobody, because they were great. Jimmy, just a mind, he laid a lot of the stuff out we did. And we had worked with them for a few weeks up prior to that, almost every night, and just getting it down, you know. And Bobby Eaton at that time was probably one of the best in the world, and probably one of the greatest ever. Just a pleasure. And Stan had so much charisma as a character, you know. And of course, Jimmy out there, and the fans loved the Midnight Express in Baltimore, because not long before that, Arn and Tully dropped the belts at a house show in Philadelphia to them before they went to WWF. So in the Northeast, they loved them.
Yeah.
I thought they would get, you know, inducted in the Hall of Fame maybe when they were up in it's in the Northeast.
I think it was New York. If I remember,
the guy hit the ring or hit on, at the Hall of Fame on Brett.
Yeah, that was in New York, I believe. Yeah.
I thought they would because they were super over up there.
You know? Yeah, I agree. Did you like having Steve Armstrong as a tag team partner? Were you guys actually friends? How well did you get along with him?
Oh, great, like a brother. I just talked to him. A couple of weeks ago, and I need to stay in touch with him better. He's not working anymore. He had some pretty bad concussions, and he's not. And you know, he takes care of the kids. He does odd jobs for an older man, you know, and stuff. And you know, he raises kids. We had a blast, and just jailed. You know, it was natural. And I knew him and Scott starting about '84. I started in '83. They come and worked in the old USWA for a little while. I traveled with them a lot. And then Steve and I hooked up in 87. Kevin Sullivan used to book the Florida territory. The old Florida Championship Wrestling is the one that put us together as a team and put the gimmick on us, the Southern Boys. And we were in Florida about a year. And then we were in Continental about a year. And then I went back to Tennessee for a while and then come back to Continental about another year. And then we were in WCW 2.5 years. We tagged together 5 years. You know, from 87 to 91, and Steve had music and had a little disagreement with him. They wanted rights to it, and he didn't sign for the second year. About the last 6 months, I was by myself. But, you know, we always was in that. We've tagged together a few times since then, and it was always just a natural fit and a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were fantastic together. I mean, I don't know why you didn't have a bigger run in WCW. Was any idea what the reason behind that was? Was it just depending on who was booking? Or
when we got there, they had a lot of tag teams. They had the Road Warriors, the Steiners, Rock and Roll Express, the Freebirds, the Samoan SWAT team. Remember them?
Yep, I do remember them.
Yeah, Fatu, who was Rikishi later, and Samu.
Yep.
I don't know if they were called that then. They might have been. I can't remember.
I think they changed it like the Wild Samoans or something like that.
Yeah, Tom Zinn, Brian Pillman, remember them? They were a team. And, you know, had a lot of tags. And, you know, and they had a lot of different bookers come through there. And, you know, that always affects you too, you know. So, you know, but I was there 2.5 years, you know.
Whose idea was it to turn you guys heel and rename you as the Young Pistols?
Dusty. The thing, remember when the, gosh, what was the guy's name? They had all the riots. He, cops beat him up or something. The
Rodney King. Rodney King.
That's it. In that rebel flag. And we don't never portrayed it, you know, as a racial by any means, but on TBS TV, that was not a good look to have on there. So they put the switches to Young Pistols, and it kind of turned us heel with the people. And you know, so we did that, you know, and a lot of fun. It's always a lot more fun to be a heel,
right?
Never
right.
really been one until then. And it just was a blast.
He just hates playing heel.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny that you know, you guys had to abandon, you know, the Southern heritage thing, but you know, the Freebirds were allowed to use that same gimmick, you know what I mean? So maybe, I guess it all depends on who you know, right? And who's closer to the booker, I guess. You know, there's a lot of politics.
They were the first ones to really ever have the rebel, you know, emblem of any type, Freebirds, you know. And it's a shame that a lot of people didn't really get to see how good Terry Gordy was and how good Buddy Roberts. He was great. Of course, Michael and Jimmy together, that was magic. And I learned so much from both of those guys, and just what great minds for the business. And I believe Jimmy, he was a commercial airplane pilot. I don't know
if he did it
for a long time. Yeah. And of course, Michael, just one of the greatest minds in the business, and it still is, you know.
Still is.
Right there with Beaks, you know, and so, and Triple H, you know, so, you couldn't go wrong, you know, working with them. We had a lot of fun and learned a lot.
Yeah, you had a pretty good run with those guys in WCW. There's a lot of matches.
We worked with them in 6 months as the Southern Boys and in 6 months as the Young Pistols.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's – and you're right about Terry Gordy. He doesn't get enough credit. I mean, for an agile big man, I mean, obviously a lot of people in the States don't know a lot about him because he spent a lot of time in Japan, you know, and with Steve Williams was there too. And yeah, Steve Williams is another guy that doesn't get enough credit. Yeah. You know, I mean,
all
that guy
– together, what a team. Yeah.
I mean, they were pretty stiff too, from what I heard.
Yeah, bad guys, tough guys, man.
Yeah. And Buddy Roberts, you know, you want to talk about a heat magnet. That guy knew how to draw heat. Yeah.
He's a perfect ball guy. He could keep his heat, and he just, what a great worker he was. We did something with him where we had Buddy in Freebird's corner and had Bob Armstrong in ours. And, man, it was magic, some stuff they did without hardly doing anything. They got so much out of what they do, you know, one of the ball, Clash of the Champions, you know.
Yeah, you got a great memory, man. I'm telling you, I remember that clash very well. And, you know, a guy that was super over like that, you mentioned, was Bullet Bob. I mean, you know, that guy could do no wrong in the Mid-South, you know what I mean? Like, he was just, he was so over. I mean, the whole family was great, but, you know, Bob was a very, very good, you know, good wrestler, and it was very entertaining.
RTW Rewind.
Wish I had the chance to meet Brad Armstrong, because, you know, I heard so many good stories about Brad behind the scenes, and besides being a fantastic wrestler, I heard he was a pretty funny guy and liked to rib a lot of people. But
he could have been a trillionaire as a comedian. He was so fun.
That's what I heard.
When it come to getting in the ring, he was a real serious wrestler, real serious interview, you know, and did great interviews, great worker. But if he could have transferred that personality he had in the dressing room or just, you know, in real life, you know, as far as that, oh, man, he would have been a big star.
Yeah, and a lot of your colleagues say the same thing, that whenever the camera came on, for whatever reason, he didn't get over, you know, just by, I don't know, if, I guess, like you said, he was very serious and he took a different approach. But if he would have used some of that charisma that he had behind the scenes, man, I've heard
a real charismatic interview. Brad was real serious. And I think the people wanted to see the Brad, you know, that we knew, you know, and God bless him. One of the best technical workers ever.
Absolutely. He was so smooth. You know, nobody ever had a bad thing to say about him, but just watching him in the ring, it was effortless. I mean, the guy was so silky smooth, man. He was light on his feet. So
Road Dogg Brian, he had all the charisma, you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
His dad, you know, and of course, a great mind because he's in there as a writer, you know?
Yep.
He's great.
And that's a guy that you would never expected to be a wrestler, given what he did. I mean, going to Iraq and being in the armed forces and then, you know, decided that when he got back, he wanted to wrestle. But, yeah, you know, you want to talk about a guy that I don't know if he started I think he started later in life. I don't think he started when he was young, but he seriously had charisma for days and it was very, very entertaining and DX and all that stuff. And like you said, he's still there now as a writer. I mean, it's a testament to that whole family, man, that wrestling was absolutely in their blood and everybody could do it, and I said, it was effortless. It was like that a lot of people that get into business don't quite have it, you know what I mean? They all see that, you know, they want to be a wrestler on TV, but they don't know what it takes to get over. But every single member of that family got over it in one point or another. It's amazing.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Vampiro. This right here is the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Tune in, get tuned up, get informed, and enjoy the podcast.
RTW Rewind.
Now, I do want to ask you, what happened when you went to the WWF, and how did you get stuck with the Freddie Joe Floyd gimmick? Given all your history and how great of a wrestler you are, was that a rib from Vince McMahon?
I don't know. They flew a bunch of few of us up to Connecticut, to Stanford, and had a meeting with the creative, which was Bruce Pritchard and Cornette. And they asked your background and a lot of stuff like that, and they come up with gimmicks. That's kind of what they did, and they came up with that. And what I was told was it was a spinoff of Jack and Jerry Briscoe. Mm-hmm. And one was named Freddie and another Floyd, or first middle name. I don't know how it went. And from, you know, they were from Oklahoma, around Bowleg, or around Bowlegs, Oklahoma somewhere. And that's where they got that. And, you know, and everything. And I mean, you know, much respect to Jack and Jerry Briscoe, two legit shooters.
Oh, yeah.
NCAA mm-hmm. champions, both of them. I don't know. You know, I don't really know the story on that. I've heard that they said it was rib. Why would you rib those guys, you know, as much as what they've done. But I think when they were on the road back years ago, when they first started going nationwide, when they were going 2, 3, 4 months without a day off, I think Jack just got burned out on the road and went home.
Yeah.
And it might have rubbed Vince the wrong way. So maybe, you know, when they sit down and talk with me at the table, and Jack and Jerry, and they brought up something, Jerry brought up something about a guy named Larry Briscoe that on the old Florida TV did some TVs for the Florida TV, and they just had him as an enhancement job guy. Mm-hmm. And when he did that, Vince was eyes lit up, and I thought, oh my gosh.
Oh, man.
And the next thing I know, I got green boots, I got a green armbands, and green tights, and that banjo music. I thought, oh my God.
I'll never forget it, you know, and obviously I knew you from previous in WCW, and I'm like, that's not Freddie Joe Floyd. That's Tracy Smothers. What are they doing to this poor guy, man?
Like the name, you know, and stuff. And I, you know, like I said, if it was that to rib Jack Briscoe, I mean, that's one of the best, you know, NWA world champion and a legit bad dude.
Both of them are legit. Shoot.
Both of them. I got them to close with Wes, with Jerry's son, and he's a beast too. And, would like to have seen him go farther, but you know how this business is, and you see that a lot. You know, he was a machine. I watched him and Chase Stevens. That's some of the best matches I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, from what I've heard from Vince, he's obviously an eccentric guy. He's got a certain sense of humor, man, and he gets off on stuff like that. You know, a lot of people say that you know, the whole thing with Dusty Rhodes giving him the polka dots was a rib and all that, and you know,
Dusty got it over, didn't he?
He did. That's how that, and Dusty stuck it to him, you know. But you made the most of what you had with that gimmick, but it's unfortunate you couldn't go farther. Just based on how good you were is in the ring. I mean, nobody ever had a bad thing to say about you either. You were a very entertaining guy, as we saw later. You know, we'll get into your ECW run a little bit, but going from WCW to WWF, it's obviously night and day. It's two completely different companies. What impressed you about the way the WWE was run compared to what you experienced in WCW with all the different management, you know, they had there within your time there?
Number one, the buck stopped with Vince. You know, it wasn't like that WCW. They had different bosses a lot, you know, and he had the final say on everything, and I guess he still does, you know.
He still does.
You know what I mean? And whatever he did, and like you said, he has a world mind. He spent six figures on a rib to push a gimmick and go with it or something.
Yeah.
You know, there was some Jimmy got into it with some of the top guys up there, Sean, and, you know, something like that, and it kind of rubbed off on us, and some of us that were his guys, and you're guilty by association, and that's just how it is, you know, and a lot of politics, you know, and But when it come down to it, is Vince's call on everything. And it was wrestling. People ran the wrestling. You can say that. And the WCW wasn't always that way. Like Jim Herd and some of the most typical, some of them, we weren't wrestling people.
Yeah.
And there was more stability, I guess, as far as the office of WWE, you know, WWF. I mean, Pat Patterson back in was his right-hand man, you know, Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah.
Jimmy was in there with him for a bit, you know, and a lot of the agents were long-time guys that worked for Vince's dad, you know, so they were pretty solid set.
And you made a good point about, you know, being somebody's boy or being somebody's guy. I mean, we saw it happen to Jim Ross because he was Bill Watts' guy. And when Bill Watts came into WCW in 92, you know, he rubbed people the wrong way. And poor JR, you know, ended up, you know, having to eat crap because of all that, you know, because of Bill Watts. But your association with Jim Cornette kind of hurt you in that situation. Where did you go from WWE? Was it did you go to Smoky Mountain after that?
Smoky Mountain was before WWE.
Okay,
'92 to '95, and then WWF '96 to '97 a year, and then after that I went to ECW.
Okay, so ECW. How did you how did you get into ECW? Did you get a call from somebody? Were you looking for a place to work?
Well, they kind of had a working relationship with WWF there at WWF then, and you remember Chris Candido?
Yeah.
He had left WWF and broke his neck. He did a pay-per-view with a broken neck. God rest his soul. Mm. John's got something good going with that, and hopefully that'll work out good, you know, involving Chris. But he asked me, he said, would you like to work a show, you know, for ECW? And I talked to Shane Douglas a few times, and the timing wasn't right. They'd always do stuff the last minute. I was already booked and stuff and before I ever worked for WWF and about working there. And he talked to Paul. And Paul did a lot of things right on the spur of the moment. But and he said, I had a loop coming up, and the last day of my loop on a Saturday was working New Haven, Connecticut, the afternoon show. And then the arena, Philadelphia, was running at night. He had asked me a few weeks before, or a week or so before, he said, could you work that show? He said, they had their first pay-per-view coming up and wanted me to work. He said, Terry Funk. I said, oh, sure, great. I'd love to. He said, can you clear it with the office here? He goes, they're okay with it. It's no problem. They have worked a little, you know, remember they had that little deal they were doing. They had a little working relationship. It's kind of on the down low.
So
I said, sure thing. So I ended up and I made that loop and traveled with Tammy. And, of course, I knew them from Smoky Mountain. Mark with Chris a lot, you know. And he's one of the best ones, too. Him, Bobby, favorite guys to work with. But so I rode up with her to the arena. She was picking Chris up that night. And at first they put me, said I was going to go with Terry. And then something happened with Lance Storm's flight. They said, do you mind working Rob Van Dam? I said, sure. I'd work with him. He's 19. And he's doing the barefoot karate gimmick. And and then they said, you mind working Taz? And I said, whatever you guys need. And so I worked Taz, and it went good, and Taz liked it. And Paul said, you know, he used me anytime, and he wanted to use me on the first pay-per-view. And I said, I had a tour to Kuwait a week, and then I had 10-day loop with WWF. He said, do that, make your money. He said, you're welcome here. So I did that, you know, and then I was kind of finished up then toward the end of my contract. So I went with ECW then, and, you know, and then that's when I started with ECW full time.
And you had a really good run there. And you know how tough those fans are, that those Philly fans, man. I heard they were chanting Freddie Joe just to kind of rib you a little bit and let you know that.
Yeah, they were, but once me, Taz and I got going and it went good, they were into it, and it was – I mean, that's when the smart mark thing was getting going. You know what I mean? You know, but, and it kind of knew that, you know, how, what Vince will do to characters, people's characters and, you know, things like that. But everybody always asked how I got with the FBI thing was all Tommy Dreamer. Mm. And Tommy, the second time when I worked there, I remember I come back from that tour and it was that loop and everything, and I didn't know who I was working with. And it was like 10 to 8. So I asked Sabu. Sabu goes over and asks Paul, says, who's Tracy working with? And he goes, I don't know. He goes, you want to work with him? Sabu's getting ready to work Taz on the pay-per-view, the first one. And so so Sabu was going to work Spike Dudley. Remember Spike Dudley?
Yeah.
He was going to work Spike. And because he was a protege of Taz's, and do a thing where he beat him down and Taz come out. You know what I mean? No contact. Yeah. And for the pay-per-view. And he goes, I'm doing that thing with Spike. So then Tommy Dreamer comes over. And he said, you have your rebel flag. I said, yeah. He goes, I want to put you in a tag. You and Chris Chatty work Tommy Rich and our little Guido, because he put Tommy with Guido when I was there that first time, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, it was.
and I said, okay. He said, you guys don't get in the ring until the finish. And then the thing where I turned on Chris, turned on Chris Chatty, and then put me with FBI, and it was like 5 to 8. And we went to the ring right there, 8 o'clock. So about 10 minutes before we went out is when I found out. And all of that dance off, the videos, everything seemed was Tommy Dreamer. He came up with all that.
You know? I was going to say, where'd you come up with that funny dance? Because a lot of people remember that, of how crazy that dance was.
Dance, I don't know if I told him, but I stole that from Steve, my old partner, Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
We were in Mexico a couple times. He would do that little dance like that. Yeah. We were heels with a mask on it.
Awesome. I love it. You know, how crazy is it that you and Tommy Rich, absolute, complete 100% Southern guys, you know, end up being, you know, Italian all of a sudden?
Back then, those Italians took serious some of them.
Yeah.
And, well, they did. That was heat. But it was good heat. You know, it was all
right.
So the Atlas security guys, they were tough guys, man. They were badass guys. And they would always say, hey, get them going so we can snatch some people up. You know what I mean? Those guys were looking. You know, they were tough guys. We never had to worry about nothing. We went to the bars after the shows, and all they do, they punk out the bouncers, the owner, everybody. Nobody messed with them. Great guys. You don't want to mess with them.
Right. I love it, man. Like, you had such a good run there, and I know a lot of people that, you know, from the Attitude Era days and all that, they remember you mostly for that gimmick. But man, it's, you're so diverse as an entertainer. You can just, you know, you can get anything over. I mean, it's, I don't think you get enough credit for the success that you've had in the business, because no matter what it is, man, you're going to give your 100%, you know, 110%, and that gimmick was very, very entertaining.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Guido was a real Italian, the real deal. You know,
he's the only one that was really Italian, right?
Yeah. He had other partners before, and they brought some guys in, or guys that were like one-man gang. They put him with us.
Yep.
And I cannot remember his name. He's from Germany. He's good friends with Sabu. He did a couple things with us. And, you know, and of course, they brought JT Smith back.
Yep.
And black guy, Italian, you know, and he was a it's a lot of fun.
I love it, man. Did you have fun working there? I mean, was ECW as crazy as everyone says it was?
I knew everybody, most of them there, and I'd just come from WWF, and that first night, I remember, go there, and a complete different app. You got dress code at WWF, you got to be on time, you got, you know, everything. You go there, and it's like a zoo, like a bunch of misfits. You know? I knew all of those guys, so it's a lot of fun. That's where I needed to be.
Hey, this is Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. It's amazing to me that turtles have the ability to speak, let alone host wrestling podcasts. I guess that's what makes them rad.
RTW Rewind.
Well, let's not pull any punches. You were kind of a crazy guy back then, too. You were the wild-eyed Southern boy for sure. But what led to you cleaning up your act and kind of mellowing out a little bit, or have you mellowed out a little bit?
Only on doctor's orders,
right?
everybody kind of was back then, and you just had to keep going and. You were on the, you know, fighting through injuries and working hurt.
Yeah.
And just trying to keep going and keep up with the Joneses. And as you got older, in my late 30s, you started feeling it. And now I'm in my late 50s. but I still enjoy it and have as much fun as I ever did. But I'm just thankful to be here. It's just, I tell you what makes you mellow out is when you see a lot of your friends dying.
All right.
Yeah. It's just so sad. It just breaks my heart. I watched the WrestleMania 3 the other night on the FS1 Fox. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. 3/4 of the guys on that card are dead, and a lot of them I knew real well. And it's just you find yourself and look at old cards, and you see 3/4 of the cards are gone, dead. I mean, that's commentators, referees, managers, wrestlers, you know what I mean? Ballets, whatever you want. I mean, and that's a humbling thing.
It really is, and you know, wrestling gets a bad rap because of it. But I mean, you can't really. I mean, you can play in the business a little bit for the scheduling back in the day and running so hard. But you know, you guys were doing everything that you loved. You know what I mean? And you know, it was with the pain and the bumps and having to take the pills and the drinking and all that. And you know, it's just you got to survive. You know?
Yeah, there's no off season, and guys in the business would work hard. With what, like football players, basketball, baseball players, they'd be out, you know, a month, a week, 2 weeks, not play another down that game. Where wrestlers keep going night after night and play hurt and it catches up to you. And boy, it does. And my body, I'm beat to death, especially like during it, stories in my book, but I wrestled 3 different bears, live bears.
Yeah,
and it go, why are you doing so bad? I don't know what it could be. I don't know what it could possibly be.
Right,
you know, concussions, and I mean, at the hospital, they checked me out head to toe, and they just the team of the surgeon and the other people, they all would come in the room every time. Then they all come at once, and they just had everything. They looked at me and they said, "You're a walking miracle. We don't know how you're alive. We've never had anyone had as much head trauma and body trauma. You had a heart attack somewhere in there. You only have 40% of your heart. We don't know how you're here." I just started laughing. And they said, "How are you here?" I said, "I pray and I drink a lot of water."
Right.
I said, "But a lot of my friends are dead, and that's not funny at all. And I don't want to be one of them." And I never thought this. You know, the cancer, it was the toughest thing I've ever been through. And I got so much sympathy for people that have it. And then, because with this going on now with the virus and you see all that, boy, a guy like me is real prone and not just have to be so careful. You have no idea. It's scary.
Yeah, but it really is unfortunate that we lost, you know, a lot of guys that I grew up watching. And, you know, is it because, you know, when they get out of the business, they don't know what to do? Like, I know a lot of guys that, you know, like, let's say Kurt Hennig, for one. I mean, he got let go by WWE because of what happened on a plane ride. And, you know, it wasn't much longer after that he passed away. Is it hard to, and I don't know if you can speak to this because you're pretty much still in the wrestling business before you got sick, but is it hard for guys to adapt to, you know, real life once they get off the road?
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend helped me a lot with that. And, I haven't wrestled full time for doing it, you know, solely for a living since 2007. Okay. Maybe I've done something. I bounty hunted and repoed cars and it was dangerous, you know, and I don't know, I didn't shot that much, but I did that for a while. And then I delivered pizzas for a bit and for Sandy's, and they do stuff with Toyota and heck, the railroad people, the hotels, churches, and all that. Dude, when I get well, I want to get back doing that some. And I can't get my driver's license renewed because the license place is shut down till June 1st.
That's true, yes.
Because I was in the hospital and fired when I was in the hospital, and I didn't even know it. I was just, you know, a lot of guys, that's all they did. And then when 911, and then when all the territories, you know, when WCW went down, ECW went down, USWA had went down before that, Smoky Mountain, that's kind of when you started seeing that happening. And guys didn't know what to do with themselves and what they'd done for so long, and then never had another trade or knew. And just, I think, a lot of depression, you know what I mean? You know, and Vince shut them all down one by one. And it is what it is, but it's just unreal, the death rate of guys. And with this epidemic, pandemic, or whatever you want to call it, with people, period. I mean, they're saying, some of these experts are saying we could have 100,000 people dead from this thing by June.
Yeah, I know.
And they're opening up another trying, but when they say this thing come from China, man-made, and they're killing us without firing a shot. But what's bad is you see, I think people put panic before prayer, mm-hmm. and fear before faith. Does that make sense? Get caught off. I think when you get caught off guard, And I watch the news more now because that's all I can do. I try to sell, we push the book on the internet, and we do a lot of podcasts like for guys like yourself and do to push it, which we didn't talk about it much, but just whatever you can do.
Wrestling books are a great diversion while you're stuck at home and you got to self-quarantine. You can't actually go to wrestling shows. So
yeah.
John, you're working out of home now, right? Your job, right?
Yeah, I've been doing my day job out of home for almost 2 months now. Yeah.
But be lucky that you've got a job,
Yeah,
exactly.
Because a lot don't. Yep. Well, you got 36 million people applying for unemployment in the last 6 weeks.
And not getting paid either. Yeah, they're not getting paid either.
No.
Yeah.
And they're trying to open up, so you just pray for the whole world and hope. It's not easy for anything, especially for like what we do, because you got gatherings of a crowd,
Yeah.
So just hopefully the whole world can pull out of this thing,
Now, what are your plans, once you kick cancer and once this whole virus thing goes away, are you going to, are you going to keep wrestling every now and then? Or are you going to keep doing meet and greets? What are your plans for the future?
It's going to be a bit for I can. I've still got this sport in me and they got to keep in case if the lymphoma comes back fast rising, they can put, hook me up on the chemo.
Gotcha.
And so I can't really so much. I can't take a bump.
Yeah.
I can't do that with this in me, and I can manage and behind the scenes do appearances and stuff if they ever start running, and things. But right now, I'm not able really to exercise as good because I had some problems with my heart.
Right.
And I'm trying to up that a little bit, but I got to be really careful on it, and like I said, I don't get out unless I have to. And I try to be very careful around it. I do the social distancing and mask and everything I need to do, I'm supposed to do,
I'm telling you, it's tough times we got right now. And I can't imagine what you've had to go through personally with your health, but I can say this for all the wrestling fans, we're thankful that you're still here, brother, for sure.
But I tell you, it's kind of a blessing in disguise that I couldn't get my license because a lot of jobs you need a valid driver's license, especially to deliver or something, because with my immunes and very contagious, it probably wouldn't be a good idea. And I would have been gung-ho and went for it and did. So,
yeah,
God works in mysterious ways. I really believe
God had to force you to stay home, Tracy. So God had to force you to stay home. Yeah, and I didn't know you didn't do it on your own entirely. So
right on, right on.
Are you saying Tracy's a little stubborn, John?
But I mean, it's part of why he's still here too. Is he's stubborn. He wouldn't let cancer take him. So, he'll get back out there with the fans, and he'll, even if he can't take a bump, he'll get out there and he'll rile the crowd up, and he can get heat like nobody's business. And
no more wrestling bears though, Tracy. Yeah. All right, no.
Well, the Humane Society and the World Wildlife Fund outlawed that. That'll never happen. They'll never do that again.
Yeah, I do have to ask though, whose brilliant idea was that to begin with?
The first time I did it on a dare, and I was wanting to get in business with a ginger black bear, 750-pound black bear.
Wow!
And
a working bear, right?
Yeah.
Well, but she was a shooter. She was the toughest woman.
The bear's a bear, man.
Right, yeah, I know.
And would pop her in the butt, and boy, she did that his own. You better watch out.
I always love the term working bear because come on. I mean,
they love to play. They're just playing with you. And the harder you with them, and you get serious, and doesn't get serious, because I saw Ginger, guy, and I've told his story on other podcasts, but a guy, a big boy, he's like 6'5", 270. Pros were looking at him, played at Middle Tennessee State University. It was the first guy I saw, and he tried to tackle that bear, and they said, don't tackle him, don't punch him. He come like he was coming off the ball. he put the got a prod to the guy's to the bear's butt to Ginger. She took him down. He hit the back of the head, blood went everywhere. Mm. They said, if you get you down, turn your head because she's trying to bite you, you know, and put your hands in front. And she got the muzzle on him.
Yeah.
And he took him down so fast you wouldn't believe it, boy. Mm. And blood went everywhere, the back of his head, and then she butted him right there with that thing and hit the back of his head, blood, whatever, and then broke his nose, pushed his nose up to his brain, and never played football again.
Mm.
That's the thing I saw. I thought, I ain't doing that. So I took all the guys, we were real mad. And they were like, no, they all got me and did. And so I watched the rest of the night and just thought, well, best offense is a good defense, and just stayed away from her three-minute rounds and try not to make her mad. And got through it. And the second time was in 86. I worked for Bill Watts. And they had a 7-foot, 1,500-pound grizzly bear.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't no social media, and nobody really kind of knew I'd done it.
Right.
I was a young guy, and I was opening match. Remember Chavo Guerrero?
Yep.
Senior?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Him and DJ Peterson, God rest her soul. You know, I got to talking. They gave me, they bought me a beer, and then they bought me a shot because I started talking. And because all them big boys, football players, bouncers, weightlifters, bodybuilders, you know, and them guys worked on a dock, you know, on low rigs. They were all in there doing it. And I said, man, I said, they're all, you can't do that. You can't, best offense, good defense, stay on it. And they like, you an expert? I said, I did it before. Next thing I know, I'm number 8.
I did it before. Yeah.
Once. I had on nice clothes, talking to a blonde. That story's in my book. And got in there with her, and she's like a street fighter, ripped my clothes off, and took me in there. I was up around the turnbuckle and butted him some way in the stomach. And next thing I knew, that dare snatched me. And boy, I was like, get this motherfucker off. I was punching in everything like a baby. And Nick Adams, who owned the bear, dove on him and had the chain put around him and got playing with him. And then I was booking to get out of there, but my clothes was ripped off like a street fight, you know. and I was back buckle to buckle, and I was almost out. And that bear from the side, and I heard a and it got from point to point, from buckle to buckle, because they're quick. They can outrun a horse for about 10 yards, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're quick, you know, like that, especially when they're mad. And, you know, and because they didn't ever like for them to wrestle more than 8 guys because it gets tired of playing.
Right.
And I barely got out of the ring, hit the floor, took a heck of a bump. Guys were pouring beer on me, everything. I crapped my pants. I did.
Yeah.
I did. And I had, fortunately, my sweats and T-shirt I brought from there, and I went to the bathroom, cleaned up and everything. But, you know, and the girl I was talking to, she didn't want to talk to me anymore. She was talking to one of the bouncers, you know. So, then the third time you see on YouTube was the first of 3 nights. And only 1 round of the 3 rounds. And Wendell Cooley was supposed to have done it, working a thing with Dutch Mantel where he, you know, for the title, would sign anything. And Dutch said, you got to wrestle the bear. And Wendell really didn't want to do it. And his knee, he got a bad knee, and he hurt his knee. Yeah. And they knew I'd done it, Robert Fuller. We worked a deal out. I did it 3 nights in a row. The first night, I worked a tag match, Steve and I, with Robert Fuller, Jimmy Golden, the stud stable thing. And then we went on early. And then right before intermission, I was getting ready to wrestle the bear. And I'm stretching and doing everything, praying, really. And I didn't know what the bear was going to do. It was a 10-month-old Siberian grizzly bear, 550 pounds. Gained 100 pounds in a month after this. And I got tapped on the shoulder, turned around, and there's a camera on me. And the lady said it was going to be on the 10 o'clock news. And then beside her was the Humane Society lady. Boy, she was giving me hell. How can you do that? It's cruelty to animals. It's got its claws cut. It only got its back teeth. This, all that. And I just looked at her and I said, look, lady, I said, I've got to work. I said, as wrestler talks,
yeah.
I said, I've got to work twice and shoot with this bear in the middle of this. And we're going to do this 3 nights in a row. I said, why are you worried about the bear? Can you worry about me over here? I was like, my music was playing. I said, I ain't got time for this. You know, they didn't show that, but they showed that part of that got shown in Atlanta. And the late Joe Pedicino's show, who just passed away.
Yeah. unfortunately.
Gordon Cooley called the match, so that was an honor. You know?
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where that come from. But I had 3 days off after that. They gave it to me, and I needed it because I couldn't go no further than the hot tub, the shower, my bed, and the floor, pumping my legs up. Because, I mean, it just was really rough.
I can't imagine what Gordon was thinking. He's like, I'm calling a wrestler versus a bear match. I mean, of all the things that Gordon had called over the years, that had to be a little strange for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, like I said, the World Wildlife Fund, the Humane Society, they outlawed that because cruelty, you know, cutting their claws and their teeth.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, bears was my favorite animal. I mean, it was a blast, but it was scary.
Well, I have to ask you, I mean, you did the first one on a dare. Dude, what the hell were you thinking to do it again? And not just again, but a third time, man.
Well, I mean, I got the second time I didn't get nothing. But the third time, I mean, Robert made it worth my while to do it 3 nights in a row. So, and I wanted to do it. You know, I wanted to do it. I did. I wanted to do it. It was a blast. '86 and '89, so it's been a little while.
Yeah,
I have people I say to me, they go, "Well, you don't look like you did when you wrestled that bear." I'm like, "My God, it was 30 years ago!"
Yeah, right.
1989, I did it. You know, and
time flies, man. I'm telling you, time.
They do that. I said, "Why do you look so bad?" I'm like, "I don't know. You ever watch YouTube and just really, I don't know what it could be. I don't know what it could be." Man. Yeah, I go playing ping pong or something. You know?
Right.
RTW Rewind.
John, you ever get tired of hearing these stories? I'm sure you've heard them a million times.
Oh no. I've been very fortunate. The guys I've worked with, from Tracy, Man Pondo, Dr. D, Hurricane JJ, these guys are great storytellers. I don't get tired of the stories. I enjoy hearing them every time, and still cracks me up every time too. So it's
Well, let's learn about a little bit about you, John, before we wrap it up here. How'd you get involved with all, you know, in the wrestling business and dealing with wrestlers?
It really, I've been a writer for a long, long time. I'd done writing for drama ministry for a number of years, and I'd written some fiction and film and done some film production. I'd done a lot of different things and had stepped away from a job at a Christian high school where I was teaching theater and, had tried to get into secondary ed and wanted to be an English teacher, and what just wasn't panning out, and was just kind of looking for something new and something different to do. And, I'd always been a wrestling fan and enjoyed a lot of books like Have a Nice Day and Jericho's Lion's Tale and a lot of Mark James's books from Memphis, and noticed he'd written a lot about Memphis, but I hadn't done anything specifically on Louisville. And, my first book was it's called Bluegrass Brawlers, and it's a history of Louisville wrestling going all the way back to 1880, all the way up to that present time, which is 2014. And just kind of went from there. My next book was about indie wrestling. I was working a lot of shows. Actually, Tracy was on. We actually didn't meet until just a couple years ago when Tim introduced us, but he was on a lot of the shows that I was at and when I was first starting to get into it. And Dr. Bob Brylett, who used to be on the board at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, got me connected with Dr. D. David Schultz. I met Man Pondo through a lot of the same shows Tracy was on. He and I had become friends, and I was like, "You've got to write a book. You know, you're just such a great storyteller. I got to have, you know." And he's like, "Nobody's going to buy my book." His book sells like crazy every month still. So
that's awesome.
It's just one thing's led to another, you know. And I've been able to do some did a second book on Louisville. I went back and did a deep dive and did a book on a guy named the Black Panther Jim Mitchell. He was the first African American superstar in pro wrestling during the Golden Age, and I actually got my hands on a bunch of memorabilia that was his, you know, that the guy had found when he was flipping his house after he passed away. It's been one thing's led to another, and you know, you do good by the people you work with, and these guys have, you know, worn themselves out over the years, and all this kind of given a lot of people a lot of joy, and you know, it's fun to be part of that community that's kind of recording the history and preserving these stories, because I mean, you know, it's as much fun to go back and discover the old stories as it is to, you know, to watch it today. And there's so much to learn too, you know. Like I'm around the indie wrestlers as well as the history, you know, the ones that don't watch it anymore, they like to watch the old stuff. And you know, I tell the indie guys and ladies all the time, you know, go back and read about these people and read about what Gorgeous George did and Jim Mitchell and Mildred Burke and stuff. You know, there's gimmicks and there's things they did back then that haven't been seen in decades, and what's old can be new, you know, that there's just so much you can learn from them. And it's always cool when I come across somebody like that who really is into that and learning the history and stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, without Gorgeous George, you know, we probably wouldn't be here talking, to be quite honest. I mean, true. He inspired so many people over the years, even Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali attributes a lot of his own character to seeing Gorgeous George, and I'm telling you.
If it wasn't for Lord Lansdowne, there wouldn't be a Gorgeous George because he stole his axe.
Wow, see, I didn't know that.
So, yeah, even further. Yeah.
Rob, Tim Dennison, a friend of mine, he's a lawyer, owns his own firm. He's the one that got me up with John. I knew of John. Mm-hmm. And like I said, John said earlier, he gave the best advice, like go year to year, your life, your career, and everything. And then he helped me out a lot with that, and it really helped a lot. And, been a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun doing it. And I think people can get the book. It's eatsleepwrestle.com.
Eatsleepwrestle.com if you want to get a signed book. And it's also available on Amazon.
But you need to go to eatsleepwrestle.com because I think Amazon, from what I heard.
It's taking a while for Amazon to ship. I've got them in stock, and I'm shipping them out same day or next day. So
okay, good.
You want to quickly sign it. We're selling it for the same price as it is on Amazon right now. So,
and they say because on Amazon, their delivery is a lot because if it's something essential. You know what I mean?
No, right, okay. Right. And it's print on demand, so it's usually a couple days after you order it that it'll print and it'll ship out. So
I gotcha.
You know, it might take you a week and a half to get it, or you know, I'm hearing people are getting them within 3 or 4 days with media mail. So
good.
It's here for the Postal Service.
Hey, my hair's growing back a little.
Hey, you look good, man.
A little bit. Shave my beard, but
you should have seen a COVID beard 2 weeks ago. It was something.
Too much gray in it. You know,
yeah, I'm telling you, man. I got enough too. My daughter, you know, I got a 20-month-old daughter, and she a couple of these right here from her. So, I'm telling you, man. You know, I plan on getting your book. I can't wait to read a lot of the stories that we didn't touch on here, and I'm sure I'll be mystified by some of the stuff that you went through. And who came up with the name of the book? That's a pretty unique name.
I just took it from as
John and Tim and me a little bit as kind of, you know, with the Bears and all. We all right. Came through ideas in there, and you know.
It was either that or Tracy and the Three Bears, and you know, just everybody dies. It's just, I mean, that's kind of his, you know, catchphrase as a heel. So, you know,
I like it. I love it. It's a great name.
Winds that crowd up like nothing.
Yeah. Obviously, Tracy, you're on Facebook. Do you have any other social media platforms that you're on that people can get a hold of you?
I need to get on there, but I'm on Facebook. It's a picture of Jesse Bell and I. And that's me.
Yeah.
On Facebook, where to get me. There's a couple guys that done a page or something on me. I don't even know who they are, you know, that's what I said with Jesse Bell Smothers. That's me.
Well, good stuff. Well, I really appreciate you being here, Tracy and John. I thank you for taking your time out. I know with the pandemic going on, it's a lot easier to get a hold of wrestlers nowadays because they're not, you know, they got nothing else to do. But especially with your health, man, I know you probably have good days and you got bad days, but hopefully it saves a good day for you. And I appreciate you taking time out to talk to me and to tell some of your stories. It's an absolute treat for me. And like I said, I had the chance to meet you once, you know, you didn't know me from Adam, but hopefully someday again, we'll get together in the future. And, you know, now that you know me and we can, you know, I'll shake your hand we'll go get a beer or something, but,
thank you very much.
I appreciate it. So, all right, guys, that wraps up our interview with the one and only wild-eyed Southern boy, Tracy Smothers, and the author of his book, John Cosper. I'm telling you, you know, Tracy's got stories for days. There's so much that we didn't get into. I want to save a lot of the stories, you know, for his book. So, you know, y'all can buy the book and Tracy gets some money for it, and you can read the crazy stories he has. I literally just bought the book as I close off this interview with them. But I had such a great time talking to those two, and I'm telling you, go back in the WWE Network, look up the stuff from WCW and WWF, and Smoky Mountain is on there as well. You can and ECW. Seriously, go out and look at the career of Tracy Smothers and watch some of his old matches, and you know you'll be highly entertained. Trust me, I had such a good time talking to both those guys. Class acts, super nice guys, both of them. I really, really want to thank John and Tracy for taking time out of their day to. to speak with me. It was such a treat and such a pleasure. And that's what RTW Rewind is all about. I mean, not just guests, but, you know, we're going to be going over a lot of, you know, great matches that I loved as a kid and a lot of wrestlers that I loved growing up. And, you know, we'll have plenty of interviews for you guys as well, but that's, you know, this show's all about old school wrestling. That's a lot of stuff that we grew up watching, you know, stuff that we love from, you know, the good old days of wrestling. So I hope you guys enjoyed this interview. We have a lot more to come. We have a lot more guests lined up from the past. I can tell you that next week, next Tuesday, as I had mentioned on the last Wednesday Night War show, that you know, due to the overwhelming response and popularity from the first show that we had with Neil Pruitt, and I know you guys were going to love this one too with Tracy. You know, we're moving RTW Rewind to twice a week now, replacing the Wednesday Night War show, because God, nobody wants to watch empty arena shows right now. So, you know, we'll be giving you this show twice a week as well as our flagship on Saturday. And we'll be breaking down Raw and SmackDown in a condensed version on the flagship show that will drop on Saturdays now. So two times a week, old school wrestling coming to you right here in RTW Rewind. Our next guest, which will drop next Tuesday, will be Nikita Koloff. And I know you guys know who he is from the past. That guy became, you know, he was a nut hair away from, you know, becoming world champion back in the old days in NWA and Crockett territory and WCW. And, you know, that guy's got so many stories to tell. So that'll be another fun one for you guys to listen to. That will drop next Tuesday. As far as this coming Thursday, I'm going to dig into my roots and let you guys know of, you know, what brought me to first become a wrestling fan as a kid. You know, I know I've touched on several of these shows of the first match that I ever watched, but was that really what got me into being a wrestling fan? You'll have to tune in on Thursday and find out. But thanks again for coming on to talk to me. So tune in Thursday to find out. If you guys want to follow me on Twitter, I am at RadRobGaming. I am also a Twitch gaming streamer. You can follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming, or just go to Twitch and search Rad Rob Gaming. I stream twice a week, Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Central, and Sunday afternoon at 2 in the afternoon. And check out my YouTube channel. It is Rad Rob Gaming. If you want to follow our show on Twitter, it is at RadTurtlesPOD. Send us an email, RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com, Facebook.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. Leave us a like there. And check out our Pro Wrestling Tees page. It's ProWrestlingTees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling. We also have a company website for the Reality Check Podcast Network. You can find all of our shows up there, as well as our bios, anything you need to know about all the great shows we have here as part of the Reality Check Podcast Network. That website is www.rcpodnetwork.com. That's rcpodnetwork.com. We appreciate all of your support, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode. I'll see you back here on Thursday for the next edition of RTW Rewind. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, only here on the Reality Check Podcast Network.